Hello and welcome to Indie Author Diaries, a weekly diary podcast with two indie writer mums. Your show hosts are Sarah Gay.
Hi, every mum.
And me, Lisa M. White, and we're talking about all things indie writing. So today we've decided we're going to talk about decision fatigue. Now, if you're not familiar with the concept of decision fatigue, a basic definition is that it's the difficulty making a good decision as a result of the sheer number of decisions you have to make. So basically, the more decisions you have to make, the more tired you get with making subsequent decisions. And so you might be experiencing this mostly, I would say, in the form of overwhelm. And often, like when you get overwhelmed by the decisions you have to make, you tend to procrastinate. And so it's kind of, it's that whole overwhelm sensation. And part of that I found over the years, and you can tell me how you experience with this, Sarah, is basically when you don't have a plan about what's next and what's ahead. And so you just kind of see everything in its totality rather than breaking it up and thinking, okay, my God, this is overwhelming, but all right, what do I need to do next? And then just taking, one piece at a time rather than looking at everything that needs to be done in one go.
I used to do that all the time. I was shocking. Like you were saying, I used to get so overwhelmed with everything that I had to or wanted to achieve as an indie author, I would end up procrastinating and binge watching Netflix all day. And it was always the, I'll think about it tomorrow, because I am so overwhelmed with what I have to do.
So having said that though, since 2014 when you published the Kirby's, you've published 16 works of fiction by the end of this year. So even though you felt all that decision fatigue, you've still managed to somehow propel yourself forward and get stuff done. So and I've got the same. So I think our take-home message here is, if you're feeling this way, don't worry, it's normal. Everyone feels this way. There's a crazy number of decisions you have to make, and we're about to illustrate that in the next part of this podcast. And so it is possible to move through and still get stuff done with that, I don't know what to do next feeling. Would that sound be right, Sarah?
That's about right. mine's a little bit more of a groan, it's like, oh, I just don't want to get up today.
That's kind of where we're at. And same for me, 4 seasons of the cooking show, 11 books, the fiction story. And we felt every step of these along the way as well. So the take home is,
and we're mums and we have children, and they take up a huge amount of your day as it is. So
your decisions.
We're basically working 20 jobs and trying to make an indie career. I mean, when you think about it, it's kind of insane.
Yes. But it's true. And I think I wish I could remember the details of the study where I first heard the term decision fatigue coined. But basically it was along the concept of, I don't know that you have a finite ability to make a finite number of decisions in a day, but just essentially that the more decisions that you make, the more tired you get making subsequent decisions. And so don't waste your energy earlier on in the day with, oh, do I want one sugar or two? It's about creating some habits or some checklists and a plan around all the decisions you have to make, so you can help reduce that overwhelm, fatigue and procrastination. And rather than seeing the whole thing and thinking there's no way I'm going to get it all done tomorrow, because there is no way you're going to get this entire checklist done tomorrow. All right. So this list that I'm about to read you is not designed or intended to overwhelm, and I've tried to make it as complete as I could think of all the things that I panicked, stalled, worried, wondered, procrastinated about. And it was the kind of list that I wish was available when I first started back in with the show when I first started producing that and learning about all the online stuff back in 2012, 2013. Okay, so here we go. I have broken up into sections. These sections are writing the story, publishing the book, creating the book itself, if you're the business side of things, having a newsletter, marketing, and then I've got our words of comfort and support. So at the end of things that we've learned, and I've tried to insert a couple of things along the way where I felt there was like an overwhelming number of decisions to make, and basically what I've done, and Sarah will probably interject with what she's done as well. Just so if you're getting started, you're thinking, I don't know where to begin. What we did might not be relevant for you because, you know, this was years ago and things have changed. Things change so fast in this space. But if you, you know, if you haven't gotten started, it might give you somewhere just to look and a launch pad from which to do your next search and to help you make that next decision. Okay, so let's get stuck into it. Are you feeling ready, Sarah?
I'm ready. I'm always ready. Okay. I have my little notes, my quick scrap paper notes, you know, jotted down.
Alrighty. So let's get into it. Decision area one, writing. So this all comes about from when you first decide to write a book. What are you going to write about? Is it going to be fiction or nonfiction? Many different areas in nonfiction and styles. You know, is it going to be a how-to? Is it going to be a memoir? That kind of thing. If it's going to be fiction, what genre? Are you going to plot out the story or are you going to pants it and, you know, take it as it comes? Now, a lot of people spend time worrying about this. After years in clinic as a naturopath, my take home thought of this is, you know what, nature's going to win out here. Yes, you will eventually be able to train yourself to do things differently. For the first book, just do it. Just get started. Yes. And start writing, and your process will evolve, and your process might not be like someone famous's process, and that's okay because it's your process. If you get a book that's a great story at the end of it, just go with it. It's okay. Okay, so other decisions in writing the book. Your character names. I have known a lot of people to procrastinate with character names. It's got to be the perfect character name. You know what? Just give them a name. Right now, I tend to just go with whatever name comes into my head as I'm typing. Often it's...
Oh, so do I.
Like I think...
Most of mine are what? So-and-so. And so-and-so did.
Yeah, like, you know, often I'll be writing a name thinking that name. I've never had an affinity for that name. It's like, whatever, that's what's come to me. So I'll just write it out now and go with it. I sometimes change it. But most of the time I just keep what happens when as the story comes. Where are you going to set the story? Okay, like, you know, there's a lot of like the right to market advice sometimes is a bit like, you know, oh, well, if you've got most of your readers are in America, set the book in America. And at the end of the day, my thoughts are yes, but, you know, Big Little Lies was a massive hit, and that book that was set in Australia, when they made the TV show, they chose to set that in America. Yes. So if you write something that is just going to reach people emotionally and on a story level, and then it gets taken into, you know, something bigger with film or movie or whatever, they will make those changes at the time. For now, just write the story. There are things that can be changed. There are some things that are absolutely necessary, like when it comes to setting. Like obviously, you know, you can't have people lost at sea if they're not in a boat at sea, right? But, you know, to some degree, like sometimes setting will take a place in that, sometimes it won't. What are your plot points going to be? So like where is the story going to end? Where is the story going to start? How many people spend a lot of time thinking about the perfect opening line, the opening chapter for the book? You know what? Get started writing it. Write the book, and then at the end you're probably going to reassess if you actually have the right beginning for the book and then take it from there. Yeah, so don't worry about getting it perfect the first time. Just start. Is your book going to have subplots? You know, your character arcs, How are they going to be a positive arc or a negative arc? Is your character going to grow through the story, or are they going to become like a villain and make the wrong choices? How is the book going to end? Is there going to be a cliffhanger, or is it going to be a complete standalone book? What point of view do you write the story in? Do you write, you know, first person or third person? Or, you know, how are you going to do it? Are you going to switch points of views? Often, when I first started, I actually started writing first person. And then after I wrote about three or four chapters, when I got a feeling of the setting, the story and where I was, then I go back and write third person. I don't know why, that's just what I do. What do you do, Sarah? You write first person, no?
I do. I did the season named in third person.
Yeah.
But the majority of the time I do first person past tense.
Yeah.
But I like to switch it up. I like to test myself every now and then and see what works. Usually I'm not happy with it and I go back to first person.
I think I tend to write as well how I like to read. Like I actually hate reading present tense. I find I reread every sentence in the past tense in my head. Like, is that stupid? Yes. That's what I do though.
No, it's not. It
pulls me out of the story. And
I originally did Autumn's Dance in third person present tense. And before I published, I just hated it. I just did not like reading in the present tense. So I had to go back and put it all into past.
I know it's probably, and I think the other like advice from people making a lot more money than me is there is certain genre expectations with tenses as well, like urban fantasy is often in first person, but you know, mine's not. So maybe when I release it, we'll find out that wasn't a good idea. But it is how it is. So yeah,
don't stress. Here's
some good, but just basically write, okay? Write. You can. Is it Nora Roberts that says you can fix a bad page, but you can't fix a blank page? You know, there's wisdom in that.
There is. I have no idea who said that, but it was good.
Okay, so your other decisions when it comes to writing. Sorry. Okay, so are you going to have an editor or beta readers, or are you going to be using a editing program? I don't use Grammarly. I've got an editor, but something like Grammarly or what's the other one? Pro Writing Aid?
I use Pro Writing Aid, probably not as much as I should. But I do have it.
Yeah. Sorry, just tacked the microphone. I haven't used one of those programs yet. I actually did an editing course and it was a little bit harder than I was expecting.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Love our editors. Love them.
At the moment I'm learning most of my grammar from my daughter who's in grade 3. she'll come home with stuff like, "Mum, I learned about a split diagraph today." Oh, wow. What's a diagraph? What's a split diagraph? Yeah, she's awesome. This is really
good. I know. My children, seriously, my children make me feel stupid sometimes.
I know.
I'm from the era of encyclopedias, you know, like Google was not at my fingertips. Through school, it's insane. And you know, I went down and my son, you know, everyone at the school knows that I write, and one of the teachers were like, "Oh, you'll have to come in and teach the kids, you know, how to write stories." I'm thinking, I am the last person that would teach them anything. They would probably end up teaching me.
Yeah, it's pretty cool though. And the funny thing, so there's all these free university courses available now. And when I was doing the cooking show, my husband got an email about one with Harvard, and it was like the science of cooking. And I thought, wow, this sounds really cool because, as I said before, I was a scientist in my, you know, first life. And I thought, oh, this sounds excellent. I'd love to know some of this stuff. Anyway, that was way more science of cooking than I was interested in. Like, you had to look at the equation for working out the amount of stretch in a piece of steak and how many logs of wood and how big the log of wood needed to be to perfectly boil an egg.
No.
And
no.
I had done a plant-based nutrition one with Cornell University. That was excellent. That was like, yep, because I've done nutrition. You know, this was not cruisy, but it was doable. But this one was like, oh my God, I'm a scientist and I don't get it. So anyway, when I was asking the Alliance of Independent Authors group for like a writing, are there any writing courses? You know, I wanted something easy for my level. And someone recommended this University of Queensland course. And I said, okay, I'm not going to have to calculate. Like, I hope it's not the writing equivalent of calculating the size of the log of wood. Anyway, it was a little bit harder than I anticipated, even though the lady suggesting it said, oh, no, it's not hard. And it's like, I feel stupid now. I can't tell you I found it hard. Anyway, so after that, that's when my daughter comes home from school and says, Mom, I've learned about this. And I was like, you know what? I've been looking at this all wrong. And so I went to the shops and I went and got her some extra books. You know how they've got all those NAPLAN, like the maths books and the grammar books for kids? And I've discovered my level is between grade 3 and 7 because I can understand what those grammar books are on about and I'm remembering it. So, and then I'm working with my editor who, you know, has an arts degree and has done editing courses and know how to do it. So the take-home message, people, is don't worry about it. Meet yourself where you're at. Don't try and be, you know, something else. I'm not good with commas. But I can spell deoxyribonucleic acid without a problem. So,
oh my goodness.
You've got your own thing you can do is the take-home message. Don't worry about it. If you can't do it, there's a course or someone that can help you with it. Okay, so next question. I think I mentioned beta readers. Okay, so the next one, how to write. What programs are you going to use? Are you going to write in a word processor? Do you write by hand? I don't think there are too many people using typewriters nowadays, but that might be your thing. Are you going to dictate? Are you going to use a program like Scrivener or another writing program? You know, people worry about these decisions. Now, I quite like Scrivener, but to be honest, I tend to do my first draft in Scrivener. And then once I export it towards the end of the first draft and it's like almost, it's the complete draft and things aren't going to change structurally too much after that, I tend to export it and then just work in my word processor because I can rearrange things there anyway if I have to. I can find things. It doesn't do all the cool stuff with tags and keywords and stuff like that, which I think I will need to learn how to do down the track. But for now, when I've got, you know, only one fiction novella, so it's not really an issue, that's my current process. What do you do, Sarah? What are you writing?
I'm all Scrivener.
Yeah. Okay.
I just live with Scrivener. I don't use, you know, my first book I wrote on my iPad in Pages.
Oh, cool.
Like, no joke.
Wow.
Yeah, I have no idea why I did it, but I wrote it all on my iPad. And but then when I discovered Scrivener, you know, I don't even use 90% of what Scrivener can do.
Yeah.
I think it's perfect for people that are plotters. Yeah. So they can get all their things in one place. I don't do that because I'm a pantser, really. But I just love Scrivener. I can export it to a doc to send off for my editor. That's all I really need it for. The only other thing I do with it is I always have my covers ready now. And I just have it up on the screen in Scrivener. So as I'm writing, I'm looking at the cover. So it keeps me in the story and it keeps me with that character. So yeah, I'm all Scrivener. Apart from that, I'm really basic. I mean, I just write. I'm a pantser. I write in Scrivener and that's it. Once I hit the end, you know, that's when the work starts.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see myself using Scrivener more as I go along. But for now, as I said, this is kind of where I'm at. All right. The next big decision when it comes to writing is when are you going to fit writing into your life? Okay. So... And it sounds like such a stupid thing to even have a question about, but it is. This is something that people tackle every day. Do I get up at 5 a.m. before the kids? I laugh when I hear that. If I got up at when I tried getting up at 5 a.m. before the kids woke up at 4:58, So when I got up at 4:58, they woke up at 4:55. You know, it was just crazy. Or, you know, 5:01, and that was it. Yeah. And there was no, and my hormones and body suffered for it. So if you can and you're a morning person, all power to you, go for it. If not, you know, when do you have the time in your day when it's least stressful? Do you write at home? Do you write at the cafe? Do you write at a desk? Do you write at a standing desk? Do you write in bed? Do you write on the chair? I mean, because, you know, over the years, my various health issues have popped up. And, you know, certain decisions after a while can be taken out of your hands if you don't take care of your body properly. And so some of these things that people procrastinate and worry about are just non-issues after a while. So, again, I say nature wins out in some of these things, and just do it when you can do it. Do it when you're the brightest, yeah, when you feel, you know, like you've got some time without getting interrupted, because it's really hard to write a scene when you've had someone interrupt you three times. It's really hard to maintain your flow. Strangely, rereading that scene, you can't necessarily tell that you were interrupted three times while trying to write it. But, yeah, your general writing vibe and your happiness about the process is significantly reduced with constant interruptions. Do you have anything to add with that, Sarah?
Just do what's best. I mean, I have an office that I don't work in. I work at the kitchen table.
Yeah.
I used to write in the middle of the night, as you know. Mm-hmm. Somehow that's just sort of changed now. And my best writing time is usually between 12 o'clock in lunchtime to around about 2:30.
Yep.
So it's only short, but I can fit a lot of words into those very few hours. It's like my brain just rushes to get it done because I know the kids are coming home.
Yeah.
So things change over time, and I think that's a part of decision fatigue. I mean, we try and get everything right. We try and get these routines, and we just wear ourselves out. But it's very natural for our bodies to start figuring out what works best for us.
Totally agree.
And you just go with it. I mean, I have my office chair in the kitchen where I am talking now.
Yeah.
And that's where I sit. Yeah. And the kids know it. The kids, you know, they come home and this is mum's chair. This is mum's, you know, computer and everything out at the end of the coffee table. But from here, even if I do try and fit some words in while they're home, I can see them. I can see them in the lounge room, see them in the kitchen. I can answer their questions. You know, I very rarely answer their questions. I'm usually in La La Land, but you know, if they want more snacks or whatever, I'm just like, yeah, you go.
Yeah.
I'm a lot less stressed.
I found the same. So like in the beginning when I was learning, like, so in 2012, my kids were toddlers. So, oh, this is another thing. If you've got kids and you're trying to write, they change so much every year. And every month. Your family way of doing things will constantly be changing. And so the system that you have when they're toddlers is not going to be the system that you have when they go to school or preschoolers, or, you know, when they're in the middle grades of primary school. I mean, my kids are only in grade 3 and grade 2 now. So what grades are yours, Sarah? Yours is grade 2 and grade 5?
Yeah, two of them are in grade 2 and one's in grade 5.
So. Yeah. So, do you know what I mean? So we're in that crazy age now. This is funny because the week that we've had, we're probably not going to share it. But, you know, if you're a parent, you understand what comes up. Trips to emergency, all that kind of thing.
Yeah, fun stuff.
But, yeah, we're in that stage now where they're old enough to get themselves a snack. And, you know, it's young enough they still need you. And now that I've moved from my bedroom where I was for the first couple of years, where my desk was, to now last year I put it in the lounge room, and I love it. I actually like writing while they're listening, watching TV or playing and drawing or whatever, because they don't tend to interrupt me as much now when they see me writing. Sometimes they'll come up and say, "What are you writing, Mum?" But I actually prefer now being around them rather than being in isolation. Having said that, when I'm in the zone, I like writing as well. And like you, mine's changed. I used to write at night and it got later and later and later. And then I had to write in the afternoon when my husband.
Oh my gosh, there have been times.
And now I write during the day. Yeah.
There's been times where we're like, what, 2 a.m. in the morning, we're sending each other manuscripts. It's like, it's
what are you still doing up? It's like, I had to finish it. I couldn't sleep. So the take-home message. You'll figure it out. Write when you can write. Don't worry about what the gurus are saying with this. I mean, first of all, just get started and then look at changing habits, because some habits might need changing. I mean, if you're writing from 12 to 2 a.m. and you've got a full-time job and young kids, your body will burn out over time. You can't maintain that for long. Like, I was listening to an author on a podcast. Oh, I'm trying to remember the podcast. This woman was not sleeping. She was doing an all-nighter and she had young kids. And I mean, you do all-nighters when you have young kids anyway, but her kids were about 3 or 4, I think. And, you know, she had a business, her husband had a business, and she was just riding late and everything constantly. And I thought, your body is just, I know because I tried and burnt out. So the body doesn't like doing that for a very long time. So yeah, don't burn out. That's the most important thing. Okay, so writing life decisions. Do you join a writer group or not? Do you go to writer events or not? Do you, watch videos, do e-courses, follow podcasts about writing? Which ones? Those kinds of decisions. Oops, far out. Sorry, I keep attacking my microphone today. Apologies. Where you live in the world may... and your personality type, like, you know, if you're an introvert and you don't like public events much, some of that's going to dictate whether you do this stuff or not. Just do what you want to do, get started, get writing. And then when you need some help, there will be resources out there to help you. That's the take-home message. So don't worry about it. That's a decision that doesn't need to be made right now. Just do. Okay, so publishing the book. You write under your name or a pen name. Are you going to indie publish or are you going to traditionally publish and send the manuscript to, what are they called? You know, the people who send the manuscript to the publishers for you. Oh,
agents.
Thank you.
Yes.
If you're going to go down the indie route, since this is what we can talk about, because that's the decision that we went down, how are you going to sell the book? Is it going to be a print book? Is it going to, like, where you do your own print run, is it going to be a print on demand or is it going to be digital? Is it going to be both? Is it just going to be one? That's a decision you'll be making. If you're going to digital, do you go only on Amazon or do you go wide? Which distributor do you go through? Do you go, like, either via Amazon, Draft, something like Draft to Digital, Publish Drive or Smashwords? Or do you go direct to each platform like Apple, Kobo, Nook, etc.? Again, where you live may have some impact on that. The other thing is, like, you know, Google Books, apparently, you know, like, you might have to go through a distributor for that if you don't have an account, as I understand it. I'm not on Google, so I don't know how Google Play works. Are you, Sarah?
No, I'm not. Yeah.
But, you know, things like this. So some of these decisions might actually be taken out of your hands, which is great because you don't have to make a decision on it. Move on. Make the decision later on when you feel more comfortable and confident in your ability to make a decision about it.
Yeah.
And also sometimes the technology that you've got might help make that decision for you. Like, for example, I've got a PC, not a Mac. So at the moment, I hear there is a workaround that I could still go direct to Apple, but... is something I put in the can't be bothered right now basket. Yes. I'll get to that later on. For now, I just use Draft to Digital and Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And the other thing is going direct to all the platforms will have their benefits. It'll take a bit of time. So think about that in terms of when you're updating back of your books and the front matter and all of this and getting your royalties. Like, each platform might have a minimum quantity, like a minimum amount that you need to earn before they will release your royalties. And even then you'll have, like, conversion fees when those royalties come into your bank account. So again, for that reason, seeing how low my sales were before when I went to publish recent the newer books, the cookbooks and the fiction book, I went through the distributor because I figured then you'll reach, you know, there's more likely you'll reach that threshold quicker. Okay, so are you going to sell your book on your website? If so, you'll probably need some plugins to do that, and that's going to depend on the kind of website that you've got. So I won't go into those decisions here. It can be as simple as a PayPal button and you're sending a physical copy to people, or it's you know, a digital one and there's different issues. Go back. I'm sure I've talked about some of the issues that I've had with that. I think it might have been in episode 3, the sustainability one. If you're doing a print run, lots of decisions to make. Where are you going to get them printed? Are you going to print locally, like I did, at a higher price, or are you going to get them printed overseas where they could be a lot cheaper? How many are you going to print? Obviously, the bigger the print run, the cheaper each unit of books costs. I can't read my writing there, so I will miss that one. here we go. What kind of paper are you going to use? And for your cover, is it going to be gloss or is it going to be matte? Is it going to be colour? Is it going to be black and white? How many images do you have in your book? You know, all these kinds of things. What are you going to write on the spine? And that's going to dependent on how wide your book is as to what you can fit on the spine, for starters. And here's just a thought. If you're doing a nonfiction print book, you're going to think about how much you're wanting to sell your book for as well, and that's going to be dependent on how much it's going to cost you to produce it. It's going to need to be a certain thickness in order to even have a spine. And yes, that means you need to have enough quality content to fill those pages. And but then it's going to cost you more to print, especially if it's in colour. So these are the kinds of things that I didn't even know I had to think about until I was like, need to release the book in 3 months. Oh my God, I need to make sure the book fits these parameters, which was fine because I had a cookbook and you can do that with a picture on the page opposite the recipe and that kind of thing. But
yeah,
you know, no one's going to pay $40 for a 5-page book. You know, it's just not going to happen.
No.
Well, they might, but they could also be very unhappy if it's not gold in those 5 pages. So anyway, there's some decisions there. And as I said, how are you going to sell the book? Are you going to sell it via your website, which means you will be sending it out? That means you're also going to be storing these print copies. Do you have space to store print copies? I saw this, I remember Joanna Penn, you know, saying it's one of the things I listened and I loved it because, like, oh my God, I feel you. She was saying when she did her very first print run, she felt those books were just like sitting there mocking her in the, you know, in the corner as I was stacked up. And luckily, like, I only did 500. While it didn't take a massive amount of storage space, now I've got it stacked in the shed underneath something. The fact is, every time I see them, there's that, oh, that was such a good book. That can help people, you know. But there it is.
Yeah.
Storage space. What else? You've got, are you going to sell it at events? That'll have its own issues. Are you going to go through a distributor? So here's another thing to think about. If you do a print run and you're going to put your book through a distributor, and this can even be with fiction, as it works, you sell the book to the distributor who makes sure they get their cut, and then they sell it onto the store at a wholesale price, and then the store sells it on to the customer. So everyone along that chain needs to be able to get a little bit of profit, or they're not going to do the time and effort involved in making that process work. So basically, make sure, again, like if you're doing your own print run and you've got colored pages and it's going to cost you a lot because you've done it local per book, you might not actually have that margin between the cost price of the book that someone would pay for your book and what the prices need to be so that everyone can get their bit. Okay, so this is just something to think about. If you've got a black and white book, that's probably going to be less of an issue because black and white is considerably cheaper to publish. Okay, so moving on. What price are you going to set the book at? Do you put a disclaimer in the front of the book? You know, is the book written in UK grammar or American grammar spelling? What do you do? What day do you release your book on? Are you going to release one book at a time, or are you going to release, or wait till you've got the whole series? Are you going to release them close together? Are you going to space them out over the year? These are, again, they seem like silly decisions, but they're important decisions. And because you know that they're important decisions, then they take a lot of energy to make, and you can really procrastinate on this and worry about it. And you're only going to learn by doing, and you're going to make some mistakes as you go through the process. So I think the trick is not to make wildly expensive mistakes, which then stop you from experimenting further down the track. And then you've got to think about, do you do a pre-order or not? And what kind of keywords and categories are you going to put your book in? Again, something I found strangely hard when I came to put up my fiction book. So Sarah, with any of that, what have you tried? Like, have you've tried releasing on different days, and have you found any difference? Because you've done a lot more releases than I have when it comes to fiction. What have you?
Yeah, I actually like to release. I try and set it up for a Thursday.
Okay.
I tend to find Thursday is when people really start to look for their weekend reads.
Yep.
So it's kind of in their mind as they come to the weekend, and then, you know, the newsletters come out because I always, you know, do like an e-reader news today and things like that for launches and things like that. As far as like print books and things now, I just do it in Amazon, in KDP. I used to order a lot of books. I went through Blurb. They were quite cheap for Australia. And I used to order a lot of print books, you know, but I tend to find when I did that, family and friends kind of wanted them for free. Like, it cost me nothing. No time, no money. So I do actually still get a lot of friends and family ask me if they can get the print book. And I mean, I just send them to Amazon now. I'm like, absolutely, look online. You can buy it from their, you know, distributors and things like that. I needed to cut corners and save money. And, you know, and it's, I understand from them, if they're not a writer, everyone wants to write a book, sort of thing, but they don't understand. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of money, that we put into this, and, they think it's just sort of free. I don't think they actually understand the cost of what it takes to write. So that's where I go with print. I just do print on demand. It's just a lot easier that way.
And I would agree. Like, if you're just starting out and you're not sure what to do, and you've got these, I want to release a book kind of, you know, big ideas, I would say don't do your own print run if money is tight, especially just because it's a lot of extra work selling the book. You know,
Yeah.
Publishing houses, this is what they do. They've got relationships with booksellers in bookstores, and that's who they sell the books to, and then the bookstores move the books. As an indie author, it's a lot harder to have that distribution channel relationship. And we talked about that a bit last time. So, yeah, I would go print on demand in the beginning, because at least there's no outright cost to you apart from making sure the design of your book fits the specifications of the channel you're printing on. The only issue now is like getting author copies. So Amazon have changed things. I haven't done this. I haven't done a print on demand book for ages now. Like CreateSpace was the last one.
Yes. Well, you know, they don't deliver them to Australia anymore.
Yeah.
To get your proof copies, which, you know, it's not good for us. I mean, I always like to make sure my covers look good. I mean, if you're in America and places like that, it's still fine. Order your proof copy. Yeah. You know, and if you're going to order any, order four or five and give them to your, you know, your mum, your dad, or things like that. But no more than that. I think for Australia, the best I've found for a proof copy, which will get me close and it makes sure that my cover fits well and everything, is Blurb. Mm-hmm. Blurb are quite cheap. It's probably cheaper for us in Australia. It's just a matter of uploading. It's an extra upload. And you know, my life these days is all about doing something good but minimal. So yeah. Everything I do is minimal. I don't have a lot of platforms anymore. Yeah. But that's good for me as well. And I think it's good for anyone who's listening, because then you can perfect such a small area. Get good at it. Get good at Facebook. Yes. Get good at those smaller platforms and, you know, join them together. I just use Facebook and Instagram and stuff. But, yeah, I have a list. I have a very short list of what I do.
I'll get you to read that at the end. And it might be a good spot to say, but contemplating, this is a really useful, like, this that we've been going through, if we say so ourselves. From budgets to our launches to this, like, just, you know, and some of our things we want to talk about in future chats. So we're thinking of just putting it together as like dot points rather than doing like show notes, because it comes back to that episode 3 sustainability thing. How much time do we have to this? This is really just like us touching base once a week to keep motivated, look back and say, oh yeah, no, we are getting somewhere. And rather than creating a whole new area of work for us to do. And so, yeah, I'm thinking of making either like a PDF of this with just the dot points listed down that you can use as a checklist or something. So if you want that, contact us and let us know, because I'm not, you know, pushing this hard unless someone actually wants it. You know, maybe you're just happy listening to the episode and you don't want to print like a PDF or a little copy of it. Yeah. In which case, we're not going to do it.
Grab a pen and paper and quickly write them down.
So anyway, we'll keep that in mind. Okay. Okay. So moving on. So the sheer amount of decisions that you need to make when it comes to producing the book itself. So I was surprised by the overwhelm, the decision fatigue that I got around this when I was doing the very first book, the Alternative Kitchen book. You have to choose the cover design, okay? So whether you're doing it yourself or you're going through a designer, you have to choose the image for the cover, the layout, the font, the words that go on the cover, the title of the book, if it has a subtitle, where you're going to position it all, the whole thing. You know, so all of these take decisions, and it's hard, because if you get a good designer and they give you, you know, 4 to 6 different layouts that are absolutely brilliant, how do you narrow it down? You know, it's so easy to get stuck in that panic of, I don't know. And that's where research comes into it. You know, go and look. You can look at the other books in your genre, or you can ask friends, or even better, ask readers of the genre of the book that you're writing, because, you know, they will know. Go to the bookshop, have a look. What kind of, you know, what are the covers of the books in that area look like? What do you think, Sarah? What are your tips around cover images?
Oh my gosh. Sorry, I'm not overly conventional, which may not pay off sometimes, but most of my story ideas actually come from falling in love with a cover, because I love searching covers. So I will see a cover image that I think will make a really good cover, and all of a sudden my story comes out. So before I even start writing, I usually have a cover in mind, and that's why I write with the cover next to me. So the first thing I ever do is a cover.
I love that. I do. Well,
I know.
We've got a friend who's a cover designer, and we will be bringing her on to chat covers as well. And her advice, which I thought was gold, was when you're writing a series, choose the cover images first. And so if you've got a cover model, make sure you choose a model that has a number of poses which are suitable for subsequent books that you're going to be writing in that series. And I thought that was excellent advice, because the first book I wrote, it was like, this is great, but then I couldn't find anyone that looked like Jessie, my character for Touch of Magic. And it's like, oh, bugger. And so, yeah, so that's the thought. So I do like having those. So now I've got the covers for subsequent books in the series, and I'm finding it quite easy to write to that, because as a reader, I used to find it really annoying when the heroine or the hero looked nothing like the person on the front of the book. It just ruined it for me. I know, how precious. Yes. But That's how it was. Okay, so other book decisions. We've got, as I said, the title and the subtitle, what you're going to write in the blurb. I should share on the Indie Author Diaries page, my son wrote a very awesome blurb the other day. I think he writes a better blurb than I do for his story. It was super cute. So yeah, I might share that later on. I've said this, the text on the spine, if you're going to have a print book, if digital, obviously you don't have to worry about that. So start with digital and cut out one decision. how long is the book going to be? My personal thoughts with this is as long as it needs to be to tell the story you want to tell. What are your thoughts with that, Sarah?
I don't ever have a number in mind. I don't even have any chapters in mind. They all sort of tend to work out around the same though, don't they? Usually between 30 yeah. to 50,000 for me. It's
and minus.
That's why. Yeah, that's right. Oh my gosh. She's like 100,000 words. It's insane.
Look at the podcast. Lisa talks for 30 minutes. Sarah talks for 10.
Yeah. That's our writing style though. I'm very straight to the point. There's no walking around here. I like to hit straight home. And yeah, like I said, my notes are all on a scrap piece of paper, and Lisa's probably got dot points.
I do actually. Only because the previous time we chatted, I'm like, oh my god, I've had to edit, and this has taken time, and so I talk better. There you go. See, details, lots of details. Okay. Right. What next is? Isn't it funny when you can't read your
own writing?
Because I've got something.
Oh yeah.
Chickens. Oh no, it's thickness. Okay, I've covered that. Chickens. What have chickens got to do with books? They don't. It was thickness. Okay, so another one is, what's the internal layout of your book going to look like? Even another silly decision. Chapter headers. Which fancy preset, you know, option are you going to choose? Just choose one. You know, if it's a crime thriller, obviously don't choose the curly one that looks like a romance. Go with more plain, you know. But other than that, just make it good enough and then move on. Unless you're spending thousands, and then you're going to have to spend more time making a decision because it's going to be harder to change that down the track. And the last thing is, you need to think about your call to action at the back of the book. You know, are you going to send people to your website? Are you going to send them to the next book? Are you going to send them to your social media? Are you going to send them to your newsletter list and a freebie? Don't put too many calls to actions in, because it's decision fatigue for the reader, because then they get overwhelmed. I don't know where to go. She's telling me to get this freebie. She's telling me to do... you know, find her Facebook page. She's telling me to buy the next book. And then while they're reading that, panicking over what to do next, their kids come and pull on their arm and say, "Mom, the cat bit my finger," or whatever. And she puts the book down and doesn't get back to it, and then moves on to the next book and forgets all those different call to actions anyway. So try to reduce the decision fatigue for your reader at the end of the book, is my thoughts. Again, yeah. I'm not earning millions, so maybe my advice is not right there. The other decision is the registration of copyright. Are you going to register your copyright? Technically here in Australia we don't need to, but you know, some platforms may ask you to prove that you're the copyright owner of the work, in which case one of those, you know, registrations where you get a certificate saying that you are the copyright owner might be helpful. That's something else to think about. And ISBNs, whether you're purchasing them yourself or you're going to use the free ones. Personally, as the company, I would prefer to purchase ISBNs. But then, as I said, when funds got very tight last year with the cookbooks, I just went with the free ISBNs and ASIN yeah. for Amazon. And going forward, I will reassess that. Okay, so let's move on to the business stuff. Unless, do you have anything else you want to add in that section?
No, I've got a basic list that we can say at the end of what I do. They don't have to copy what I do, but it's, yeah. if you want to get rid of this exhaustion, it might help.
The simple things that we've actually done. Yep. Good
yeah.
idea. All right. So, and that's a good thing to say, like, this is the entire list of decisions you'll come across, or not the entire.
This is what stresses you out all the time, because there are, you know, it's not about just write a book. It's, there are just hundreds of decisions when you really pull it apart, which is what Lisa's done.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a part of actually what causes fatigue, because this is for one book and we're trying to write, you know, anywhere between 4 and 12 books a year to keep in front of people. So this is constant work over and over and over. It gets easier, but, you know, this is what causes exhaustion, and then we just don't want to do it because we know how much work's in it.
And the other thing is, there's so many resources out there. There'll be blog posts on all of this stuff, and books on all of this stuff, and podcasts on all of this stuff, and videos and e-courses and everything. And it's, you know, each one brings out new things that you haven't heard of before, and it sends you off on a little rabbit hole. So this is this is the rabbit hole. Don't get stuck on the rabbit hole. Let's start building the tunnel to go where we want to go. Okie dokie. So the business stuff, we've covered this pretty much in our budget talk, which was episode 4 from memory, and book launch
3 and 4.
Yeah, and 3 was, social media, I think. So go back and listen to those after this if we haven't scared you away. So the business side of things. Are you going to be a sole trader, a partnership if you've got a co-writer, or a company? Different, you know, reasons to do either, serious reasons to do either. So you're going to have to chat with someone who knows more about that, like a lawyer or an accountant, or do a lot of research on that for yourself. If you're a company or a business, registering for GST, if you're in Australia, we are, hence that's what we're talking about. Are you going to do your accounting yourself? Do you need to see an accountant? Which accountant do you choose? We've been having a really cool chat in the Alliance of Independent Authors group in the last week about, like, Australian taxes and, you know, all these things. How do we actually, you know, what do we need to record and all this stuff? And it's quite interesting. So, that's just things to think about. Make sure the take home was, make sure you have an accountant who understands online book selling, for starters, and royalties and how that works. Getting a website, okay? Lots of decision fatigue and panic and procrastination around this stuff. What's your domain name? Who are you going to get your domain name from? And where are you going to have your website hosted? What kind of website are you going to have? So at the time of recording this, you've got the kinds of websites that you have are like WordPress. What have you got? Wix?
I use Wix.
There's a couple of others.
Only because there's so much you can do in one platform. So Wix does my blog. Wix does my newsletter and subscribers. And of course your domain and hosting. So I do a lot through one platform.
Yeah. So you can buy the domain and the hosting from the one place. And with Sarah's, you can even get the newsletter included in that. I get my domain from WebCity. I have my hosting with SiteGround, and I use MailChimp as my newsletter because it's free at the moment of recording this. But when you have 2,000 subscribers or less, and I've got much, much, much less. So that was a way to keep my costs down. That means there's a little bit of fiddling with integration of things, you know, like directing people to sign up for the newsletter and stuff, but I've simplified that over the last year as well. And I use a WordPress website. But go back and listen to the previous episodes. I think it was in 4 or 5 where we talk about that. So domain name, you know, some people wonder if they choose their book or their author name. Use your author name, because then you can list your books there, and you can even potentially down the track put other pen names on there just as a tab on the website saying other pen names, or also writes as. The website design, this is something that causes a lot of panic as well, because you go and then you look at everybody else's websites, and then you're like, oh no, I need everything. And then you think, I don't know, you get like, even though you're a writer, you don't know what to write on these pages. Like the About Me page can be hard to write. So here are the basic pages. If you've been procrastinating on this, this was the place to get started, and then take it from there down the track when you've got the time and the energy to look at it again. You'll need a home page. You'll need an About Me page. have a books page, and you can either list them all on the one page or have a page for each book and make sure they show up in the menu. You can have a blog if you like, and you could do something like events or an as seen in or a work in progress. They're the and contact me, okay? They're the basics, the absolute basics. The other pages to think about for the website will include things like privacy policies, terms and conditions, and potentially disclaimers, especially if you've got nonfiction. Nowadays, everybody pretty much needs a privacy policy. And if you're selling through your website, especially, or you've got like a forum or something on there, then terms and conditions are also important to have. Don't copy and paste these from other people. You need them to be specific for your website. I got some templates that I could customize through a place called legal123.com.au, I think was the website here for where I am in Australia. And, you know, I get to choose, I'm in South Australia, and to do it that way. And when the GDPR stuff came around at the beginning of the year, a woman called Suzanne Dibble, who's in the UK, had a pack which helped you create and customize your own cookie policies and privacy policies and things like that. So it would be, you know, worth looking into things like that. Just a couple of other things that people have on websites are things like, you know, ads or affiliate marketing. I don't do these things, so I can't talk much about them. I'll just say the reason why I haven't done them is they just don't resonate for me. And like the affiliate thing just doesn't resonate. I just haven't done that. But also, I never had a whole lot of website traffic anyway. And I just felt that, you know, the extra following up that I would need to do for what wouldn't be a whole lot of income from people clicking on an ad on my site, and it would just make the site look horrible anyway. I didn't bother. Like, it just wasn't something that I wanted to be chasing my time doing. I prefer the streamlined look. I think ads on an author's website probably doesn't look too good. If you've got a non-fiction website, people probably expect it a little bit more, more open to seeing it there. But I guess it's just what you want to do. For me, with the cooking show stuff, I wanted to keep it streamlined, so I just didn't go down that path. And then, because there's a whole load of other decisions down that path, if that's what you're into, then listen to other people who are into it. I know I was listening to Paul Teague's podcast recently, and he was talking about affiliate links, and I'm pretty sure Joanna Penn from the Creative Pen talks about affiliate links as well. You want an image that you're going to use as your author image. So it's a headshot if you're going to use your face. If you've got a pen name because you write something secretive that you don't want anyone to know about, then you'll have some different kind of image to use as your author branding around the place. You usually use the same image on your social media accounts. If you can either use like a free design, or you can pay someone to design your website. My experience has been the paid design looks beautiful, but it's been harder for me to maintain than I thought it would be, even considering I had a basic understanding of maintaining my website, because I don't get the coding that she's done. And it's not her fault when updates change stuff and they're always changing stuff. So I've now, for my author one, I've just gone with plain, the free theme that I can update with relative ease. It's not as exotic as some of them, but it's just a landing page for people. And it still looks nice enough for now. When I'm earning money and I've got some room to make different decisions, I will come back to it. What do you reckon? Would you say there's any other pages to think about on the website? Or does that pretty much cover it?
No, that pretty much covers it. Your books are you and the books are what's going to sell.
Yeah.
So make sure you talk about yourself, things you love, and your books are, as soon as they open up the webpage, they can start to see your books. Yeah. That's what's important. Yeah.
And another silly thing, like if you do go down the blogging path, consistency and regularity is something that works with all of this stuff. You'll find yourself with decisions about what do I blog about? How long do I make my blog? What images do I use in my blog? What subject name do I use in my blog so that people might click on it?
All right. Oh, gosh.
You can save yourself some time for now and think about the blog later. Get the book finished first. So what else? I've said the bios. It's good. I saw the advice somewhere and I've done it myself. Have a short bio, have a medium length bio and have a long bio. And choose which one you're going to put on the website and choose which one you'll use in the back of your books. But have them at hand if you need them anywhere. You could even have it like a press kit on the site, which usually involves some information about you and some pictures of you and your books and your blurbs that anyone interested in sharing information about your book can access. But really, the reality is it takes a lot of time and effort to get a lot of traffic to a website. And a lot of people worry that the minute they have their website, it's like, oh my God, I'm out there in the world. But don't worry, it's unlikely that you're going to be flooded with a whole lot of people straight away. So you do have some time to start working on this. Unless, of course, you know, you're lucky you've gone viral and you've just got. Okay. Newsletters, mailing list providers. Again, a lot of panic and decision fatigue around this. There's a lot of different providers. My decision came down to finances in the end. MailChimp said free for 2,000 until you get 2,000 subscribers. And then it also made automation free because at first I was paying and it was still the cheapest at the time for delivering what I needed to do. There were other ones, but they weren't free for that, you know, that many subscribers. Having said that, there's no help with that. So when you have a problem, you can be stuffed if you're not careful. So you're going to have to take that decision and do something with it. How are you going to write your newsletters? You know, how often do you write your newsletter? Something people panic about all the time and they delay and then they don't do it because they hate it because they feel they have to be salesy. I made the decision when after spending thousands and thousands on trying to get newsletter subscribers and following all the advice the experts were telling me, in the end I said, stuff it. I'm not doing it. I'm just doing it my way. I hate that sleazy, salesy feeling that I was getting from all these 5 minutes left until the cart closes emails. They just really annoy me. And yeah. And so what I thought is, what would I like to hear from my favourite author? And it's basically a bit about what's been going on in my life, what I'm doing with the writing, something funny about my cat, and that's it. And I've made a decision, you know, how often do I write? Some people say you've got to write weekly or you lose contact with your subscribers. Well, you know what? If you write weekly and then you miss it and then you become all haphazard, people lose interest anyway. And life changes. People's lives change. So write what you can sustain first and foremost. And so I write now once a month and I have called it the full moon newsletter. And I write on the full moon. That's when the newsletter comes out. It's a different day every month, dependent on when the full moon is. But it's when the full moon is. And I can maintain that. And I like it. It's kind of cute and quirky, fits my urban fantasy thing. And the other thing is I've only got like a few subscribers, but I'm doing it to create that habit. And that's what I do. So what about you, Sarah? What are your thoughts?
I try and send out a newsletter twice a month.
Yeah.
I don't do it any more than that. You know, I'm the same as you. I don't want to overload them. So I'll usually send out a personal one, like what I'm doing and where I'm at. And then I'll send out a book one as well, just to let them know, like if there's any specials or any new releases coming and things like that. So, yeah, I don't really like being pushy. I think if they're going to love you, they're going to love you. And if not, you know, you're sort of wasting your time.
Yeah, I agree. All right. And the other panic, like you, if once you start looking into this, you might see things like, you might see things like, you know, split testing things like headers and stuff like that to see what makes people open the newsletter and what makes them click and all of this. And you know what, don't get stuck in that rabbit hole. Just start creating the habit first and then take it from there. Okay, so we're coming to the end of this mammoth episode. The last section I've got that people have decision fatigue around is marketing, which ad platforms you're going to use, you know, which social media platforms, what kind of newsletter you're going to do, if you're going to have a pre, what's it called? Pre-sale, what's it called?
Pre-order, yes.
Yeah, there's PR, you know, do you do traditional PR? My advice would be if it's a first book, no. And especially if your funds are tight and you're needing book sales. If it's not that, then you can reassess down the track. Okay. And yeah, promo options and pricing, you know, is it free, 99 cents, that kind of thing, or do you do events? And we've discussed that last, so I'm not going to go into that in too much depth. But what I would like to say is, as I said, it's all changeable. So someone early on when I was doing the business courses was saying, like, it's not a tattoo. I really liked that. You know, it's not permanent. You can change things. You can change business names. Like InstaFreebie has changed their business name recently. You can change your website design. Sarah does it often.
I do it. Yeah.
You know, like, you can change all these things. Like, you can change your book covers. You can change what you've written in the blurb, unless it's a print book, which obviously you can't change. You can still change the design from that point onwards. You know, traditional publishers do it all the time. They re-release books with different covers. So, yeah, it's don't get stuck down in some of these decisions, which at the end of the day, don't worry too much. What do I do now? I've got a cover designer. I try to choose my covers in advance. I just use simple Scrivener and my word processor. And I've got like a couple of writer friends who I ask their opinion on my blurbs and stories, and I've got an editor who looks at my book. And I've pulled everything back for the simplest. As I've told you, my website hosting, my mail newsletter, and my main two social media platforms that I use are Facebook and Instagram, even though I do have the accounts for some of the others. And that's it. That's pretty much it. So yeah, just take one step at a time. Don't. Which stage are you at? Are you at the writing the book stage? Focus on those points and work through them. Are you at the getting your website set up stage? Then focus on that and go through there. Yeah. So Sarah, over to you.
Thanks, Lisa. So everything that Lisa just spoke about, that in a nutshell is what indie authoring is all about. These are all the decisions that go through our head every day that we're thinking of a book or writing a book or putting out a book. These are the things that we have to think about, and it's something that you can't take shortcuts when it comes to that. But what you can do as you keep writing is you start to get a plan and compact it. You know, you start to figure out what you can do for that day. So if you've got like a pen and paper, you know, all we're doing is giving you an example of how we work and what we do with each book. So if you want to follow what I do right now, it's not going to make you thousands upon thousands of dollars a week, but it's slowly building my platform up where every month gets better and better. So the first thing I do before anything else, which we just spoke about, was I find a cover. I am absolutely inspired by covers. So usually if I see a cover and a story comes to mind, that is how my story begins. So I find a cover, I get that ready with my story, and I just start writing. I don't worry about whether it's good or whether it's bad. I cut a lot out at the end of the day. But I write that story, and once I've got that done, I send it off to an editor. My editor is fantastic. She's going to – and if you've got a good editor, they're going to tell you what works and what doesn't.
Yeah.
Once I get that back and we're happy with it, I format it, and like Lisa said before, while you're formatting, make sure you're thinking about your call to action, because you want people to buy through. You want them to buy your next book or find you on social media. and you want them to follow you. So make sure you've got that call to action. That is my simple step for writing and beginning the publishing, because decision fatigue is something that, you know, it can make or break you sometimes. I mean, you know, we've talked about this a lot and we actually love the word decision fatigue. I mean, we are absolutely overloaded as it is. You know, we think about writing, we think about editing covers, blurbs, formatting. I mean, then you've got your graphics, your social medias, your reviews, whether your marketing plan's going to work. And while thinking of all of that, you're thinking about starting the next book. And when you don't have a personal assistant to help you, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot. And I tend to find that I procrastinate because I don't want to deal with that day. So that's why I've got my really basic plan. So after we've done our call to action, we're ready, we've done our formatting, I don't go to individual sites. So I use Amazon Direct, KDP, and I use Draft to Digital. I use that for my my print on demand is also in Amazon. So I only use two platforms. Now, I use Kindle Unlimited for my long books and I use Draft to Digital for my short books. I just find it easier than uploading individually to each one, to each platform like Apple and this and that, because like we were saying before, we can change back matter a lot. As we write more books, we update a lot more. So it's easier if you've got that one platform that you can upload your new back matter or whatever, and they will send it out to all the platforms for you as an update. So that's it. I have pretty much just told you cover, write, edit, format, Amazon, and Draft to Digital. That is how easy I have made my life as far as how I get my books out there and distributed. With social media, I now just use Facebook and Instagram. And the reason I use both of those is I post on Instagram, which automatically posts to Facebook. Mm. So I'm essentially updating two platforms, but only using one. You know, with the social media, I mean, I love social media. I'm on it all day. I talk on it all the time. And I want to show people a little bit about me. Like, I love animal memes. I love my dog.
It was so funny.
I love unicorns. So this is the stuff that I post. Don't know, Lisa, it's funny. I love my slippers. We love slippers. I would pick my platforms. You can go Twitter, whatever. I'm just telling you what we use, and that is Facebook and Instagram. Simple, it's done. Okay, so as far as marketing, everybody knows I'm pretty big into marketing now, but when I started, I went with as many sites as I possibly could. I put a lot of money into ads. I put a lot of money into bloggers, into, you know, blog websites, book websites. I mean, it was just insane. And the good thing about it was, you know, out of the probably 120 that I used, I ended up nailing it right down to, you know, a handful, really. I use Book Cave to give away free books as lead magnets. I use Book Cave to promote my sale books. I use AMS ads. I use BookBub ads. Occasionally I'll use Facebook. I love eReader News Today and Expresso Blog Tours. So they are pretty much my go-tos. As far as reviews, I've been really lucky. It's been mainly from readers that give me the reviews, but I'm actually thinking, which we'll talk about another day, I'm actually thinking of trying out Booksprout and seeing how Booksprout goes for that. So with my marketing budget, like we've told, if you want to de-stress and not worry about spending thousands and not getting return on investment, start small. I have a budget of $120 a month as far as marketing. and my graphics for everything, I just use Canva for free. So yeah. That is my plan. If you can write it down, I go cover, I write it, I edit, I format, I put it on Amazon and Drafter Digital. I use Facebook and Instagram, and I use BookCave, AMS, BookBub, and occasionally the Facebook. That is my entire book, what would you call it? Tick off plan, I would say.
What's the word? There's a good word.
my entire publishing outline. I have no idea. It's all written on a piece of paper. Now, that is just for the book. Sorry, it's really simple. As far as trying to tackle everything every day, I mean, like we just said, there is so much you have to think about. I decided to not get overloaded. Now, I'm not like Lisa and have a diary and beautiful bullet points. I tell you, this girl keeps me on track. what I do carry is I carry a Scribble notebook. So instead of thinking about the 30 things I have to tackle, I write down every night before I go to bed 5 things I need to get done for the next day.
Ooh, that's very organized. I don't do that. I've aspired to that. I've tried a few times and I don't.
Considering I don't keep a diary. I don't keep a diary, I have no idea what's on that day. I do write down 5 things I want to achieve the next day. You know, that could be writing, it could be getting my graphics ready, updating my logos, or planning a sale on a book. I don't try and do more than that. If I get them ticked off, I'm super happy. If I get them ticked off and I still have time on my hands, I'll write down 3 more things I want to get done before bedtime. Mm-hmm. It's probably the only list that I do keep. And so that night before I go to bed, I write down 5 things I want to do the next day. It just stops me from getting overwhelmed and shutting down, because you know, as chilled and breezy as I sound most of the time, my brain does not stop going. There's so much I have to achieve and it can be really overwhelming. And there have been many times where I've had to stop writing for a few weeks and just really shut down because I'm exhausted. And since I started doing my 5 things per day, realizing there is only 24 hours in a day, I cannot do more than that. Since I've been doing it, I mean, this is the health we talk about. You know, it's not just about being a writer. You can't write if you're worn down, you're sick all the time. I mean, we were so sick last year trying to do writing and magazines and being parents. And there were many times, you know, Lisa and I, we were blubbering on the phone to each other. And, you know, this year we've been really good. I mean, you've had sinuses and things like that. But, I mean, since I cut so much of that worry out, I mean, I haven't even been sick, which gives me more time. I mean, we've pretty much covered everything in this one. If there's anything you feel like we haven't covered, or, you know what, even if you want to just tell us something that works great for you and helps you, you know, with decision fatigue and things like that, you know, download the Anchor app. You can leave us a message. You can ask us questions. You can go to our Instagram page, Indie Author Diaries. You can ask us questions there. Send us a message. Yeah, email us. We're happy to talk with other people and, you know, get your take on things as well.
Yeah, and let us know if you're finding this useful. Anyway, that's the end of today's episode. It was a long one. I think that's our longest yet, Sarah.
And I think so. my whole 5 minutes worth of knowledge.
No, it's like a diamond, honey. It's been condensed into sparkly and precious. So we will be back again with another one next week. And what are we going to talk about next time? It was going to be consistency, like either maintaining consistency or health. Which one did you want to talk about?
No, I think it was consistency next.
Consistency. All right.
Yeah, so, as consistent as I can be, but yeah.
So tune in again to see, are we going to be consistent and actually talk about what we say we're going to? only time will tell. Tune in next week, and thanks for listening. Especially if you stay to the end, let us know. Okay, then, have a great week.
See ya.
Bye.